Welcome to Words with Gems' first anniversary podcast. We are absolutely delighted to bring you an old friend of the magazine, Amanda Hodgkinson, reading the opening chapter of her novel 22 Britannia Road. This book, which has already been hugely successful in hardback, will come out in paperback on the 2nd of February. It has already been named Orange New Writers Book of the Month for February.
Number 22, Britannia Road, 1946. Janusz thinks the house looks lucky. He steps back to get a better look at number 22, Britannia Road, and admires the narrow red brick property with its three windows and blue door. The door has a pane of coloured glass set in it, a yellow sunrise sitting in a green border with a bluebird in its centre. It's so typically English, it makes him smile. It's just what he has been searching for. It is the last house in a terrace, and although it stands next to a bomb site, somehow it has escaped any real damage itself. The only sign is a crack in the coloured glass pane, a line running through the bluebird that makes it look as if it might have problems if it tried to fly. Apart from that, it's possible to believe the war has never touched this building. It's a fanciful idea, he knows, but one he likes. Maybe the house will share some of its luck with him and his wife and son. Don't you worry about that eyesore, says the estate agent beside him, waving his hand at the wasteland where dirty-faced children are playing. That'll be cleared in no time. We'll have this town back on her feet quick enough. He straightens the cuffs of his tweed jacket and hands Janusz a bunch of keys. There you are, all yours. I hope you like living here. Can I ask where you're from? Janusz has been waiting for this question. The first thing people want to know is where you come from. Poland, he says. I am Polish. The estate agent pulls out a cigarette case from the inside pocket of his jacket. You speak damn good English. In the army, were you? And that is the second thing they ask. What are you doing here? But Janusz is at ease in this country. He knows the manners and ways of things. Keep everything simple and to the point. Let them know you're on their side and they're happy. The first time someone had asked him where he came from, back when he had been anxious about his foreignness, seeing it like a birthmark, a facial port wine stain visible to all, he had mistakenly tried to answer them. He'd not been in England very long, a year if that, and the loud, bloody enthusiasm for war he found among his new comrades had lit a kind of fire in his heart. A rich blazing ran through his veins and flared in him an outgoing recklessness he'd never experienced before. He was in a smoky hall with a noisy crowd of RAF men drinking beer the colour of engine oil and launched into his own story. The whole journey from Poland at the very start of the war to France and then England. Too late, he realised he'd made it too complicated. And in any case, nobody was listening. Nobody wanted to know about the women he'd left behind. He carried on, stumbling over vocabulary, finishing up lost in his own regrets, mumbling into his beer in Polish, talking of painful things like love and honour. When he left the hall and stood in the sobering night air, looking up at a sky littered with stars, he regretted every foolish word he had uttered. He squares his shoulders and closes his mind to those memories. I served with the Royal Air Force, he says, his voice clear and steady. The Polish Corps. I came over in 1940. I've been here ever since. Ah, right you are. The man smiles and offers him a cigarette. I was in the army myself. I met quite a few of your lads. Great drinkers, the Poles. He lights his cigarette, flicks the match onto the ground and hands the box to Janusz. Stationed round here, were you? No, said Janusz, taking the matchbox, giving a brief nod of thanks. We moved a lot. I was demobbed in Devon and offered work here or up in the north. Well, you'll find this is a decent enough area. Ipswich is a nice little market town. And you got this house just in time. I've a list as long as my arm of people wanting this property. If you hadn't been there, banging on my door before I'd even opened up, it would have been some other fellow who'd have got it. It's a nice family house. Have you, any family? Yes, I have a wife and son. They are coming to Britain next month. Reunited, eh? That's good to hear. Janusz takes a drag on his cigarette, blows a smoke ring and watches it drift out of shape. I hope so. It's been 6 years since I last saw them. The estate agent cocks his head on one side, a concerned look on his face. That's tough. Mind you, look at it this way. You've got this house, a job, and your family coming over here. Add it up, you've got yourself a happy ending. Janusz laughs. That's exactly what he is hoping for. That's right, he says. A happy ending. When the Red Cross officer told him Silvana and Oryk had been found in a British refugee camp, he had not been able to smile. They're in a bad state, the officer said. The man's voice had dropped almost to a whisper. They've been living in a forest. I gather they've been there for a long time. Good luck. I hope it works out for all of you. Janusz jangles his new house keys on his finger, watching the tweed-jacketed back of the estate agent as he walks briskly down the hill. So this is it. Peace time. And he's got a house. A home for Silvana and Oryk when they arrive. His father would have been proud of him, bringing his family back together, doing the right thing, looking to the future. He can't return to Poland. Not now that his country has communist rule imposed upon it. He must face facts. Dreams of a free and independent Poland are just that, dreams. His home is here. Churchill himself said Polish troops should have the citizenship and freedom of the British Empire, and that's what he's accepted. Britain is his home now. If he ever speaks to his parents or his sisters again, if one day they answer his letters and find him here, he hopes they will understand that this is where he has chosen to be. He pockets his keys and wonders what life here will bring him. When he was offered two jobs, one in a factory making bicycles in Nottingham and one in an engineering works in a town in East Anglia, he sat in a library with a map of Britain and put his thumb on Ipswich. It was a small town with a harbour squatting on a straggling line of blue estuary leading to the sea. With his little finger, he could reach across the blue and touch France. That's what decided it for him. He would live in Ipswich because he could be nearer to Helen. It was a stupid reason, especially when he was trying so hard to forget. But it eased the pain just a little. He yawns and sighs deeply. It feels good here. The air is clean and it's a quiet place. Terraced brick houses stretch away down the hill. In the distance, a church spire reaches for the sky, the top of it boxed in by scaffolding. Whether the scaffolding is there so that long-awaited repair work can be carried out or because of recent war damage, he doesn't know. And he doesn't care. He has stopped believing in God. Now he hopes for specific things. A job to go to. A family to care for. And perhaps one day, a small degree of happiness. Beyond the church, rows of housing are hemmed by the river and the tall chimneys of the factories. Beyond them are fields and woodland. Above him, the sky is chewing gum grey, but some blue is breaking through. Helen would have said there was just enough blue to make a pair of trousers for a gendarme. He lights another cigarette and allows himself to think of France. It's a weakness that he savours briefly, sweet and good as an extra spoonful of sugar in bitter barracks tea. He thinks of the farmhouse with its red tiled roof and blue wooden shutters. Helen standing at the kitchen door, her tanned skin and her warm southern accent, the life in her beautiful eyes. He finishes his cigarette and wanders through the house again, planning, making lists of things that need mending or replacing. Flinging open the back door, he strides out into the garden. It's a long, rectangular piece of land. The grass hasn't seen a mower in years, and there are nettles and brambles everywhere. At the end of the garden is an old oak tree. It looks just right for a treehouse for his son. And when the lawn is cut and the weeds are dug up, he'll have flower beds and a vegetable plot too. A real English garden for his family. With his list of things to do in his hand, Janusz stands at the front door and watches the children play on the wasteland beside the house. Hard to imagine his son Orik will be one of them soon. Janusz is going to be a good father to the boy. He's determined to get things right. In the grainy sunlight, the children laugh and leap, shrieking through the afternoon, their shouts mingling with the sharp-edged call of gulls from the quay. When Janusz hears the cries of women calling the children home for tea, he locks up and walks back to spend his last night in lodgings. At the town hall, he fills in forms and waits in queues for government vouchers for furniture and paint. The furniture comes from a warehouse near the bus station and is all the same, solid square shapes in thin, dark stained wood. He buys wallpaper from Woolworths. Summer days, cream-coloured with sprays of tiny red roses in diagonal lines. He gets enough for the front parlour and the main bedroom. He buys wallpaper for Oryx's room too, asking the advice of a shop assistant who says she has a son the same age. He papers the hall and the kitchen in a pale beige, patterned with curling bamboo leaves and twiggy canes in soft green. Upstairs, rose pink paint for the bathroom and the landing. Oryx's room has grey formations of aeroplanes flying across its walls. It's a good-sized room. He'll be able to share it with a brother one day if everything works out the way Janusz wants it to. Every evening, Janusz comes back from work and starts on the house, finishing only when he is too exhausted to carry on. When he lies down to sleep, he has the impression his arms are outstretched in front of him, still painting and wallpapering. Alone on his bed at night, he dreams. He enters his parents' house, running up the porch steps. The heavy front door swings open and he calls for his mother, but he knows he has arrived too late and everybody has gone. In one of the empty high-ceilinged rooms is a dark-haired woman in a yellow dress. She stands up, takes off her dress and beckons to him. Then, maddeningly, quick as a fish in midstream, the dream changes direction and she is gone. He wakes with a start, eyes open, heart thumping. He moves his hand towards the ache in his groin and twists his face into the pillow. This loneliness will kill him, he's sure of it. Victoria Station is huge, and even at 7 in the morning, the place is noisy and full of lost people who grab Janusz by the elbow and ask him questions he can't answer. He wipes the sweat from his forehead with a handkerchief and checks his watch. He has been practicing what to say when he sees Silvana. "It's been a long time," is what he thinks he will say. It sounds casual and yet full of meaning. He finds himself searching his mind for Polish phrases, but he's been immersed in the English language for so long now he has lost the habit. It's like trying to recall the names of half-forgotten school friends, requiring too much effort and an unwilling excavation of the past. Truth is, there's too much nostalgia in his mother tongue. If Silvana can speak English, it will be easier. They'll be making a new life here in any case, and she will have to learn the language. "Welcome to Britain" is another phrase he thinks he might use. The platform overflows with crowds. Suitcases are piled high on trolleys, and rag and bone bales of clothes and belongings are everywhere. People blur past in greys and browns and dark blues. He scans the crowd, trying not to think of Helene, how he had once imagined it would be her he would meet like this after the war. Then he sees a woman looking his way. He stares at her and feels a jolt of recognition. Everything comes back to him. It is Silvana, his wife. His hand goes up to take off his hat, awful, narrow-brimmed trilby. It came with his D-mob suit, and he swears it's made of cardboard. He smooths his hair, spreads finger and thumb across his moustache, coughs, clasps the hat in his hands, and walks towards her. She is wearing a red headscarf, and now he has seen her. She stands out in the colourless crowds, like a single poppy in a swaying cornfield.